I want to be alone. And that's why I'm talking on the radio. But what about you? Let's be honest. Loneliness is a state most of us fear. And there's little doubt that strong social networks improve quality of life. But increasing isolation seems to be an inevitable byproduct of our modern times. But what about the impact of social media and the easy fellowship of the internet? Here's a question for you. Does the internet make you lonely, or are lonely people attracted to the internet? Facebook and Twitter have made us more connected and widely networked than ever before, but what's the quality of those interactions? Are they good enough substitute for the real thing? Or perversely, are they making us even more isolated? Let's look at it together in a radio kind of way, sort of old school social media. Helen Razor is a writer and broadcaster. Andrew Lee is the federal Labor member for Fraser and the author of Disconnected, 2010 book, which chronicles the collapse in what's called social capital. We'll start from there. Andrew, g'day. And what is...
G'day, Jonathan. G'day, Helen.
What is social capital, having expended some of it?
Indeed. Social capital is the notion that the bonds between us have value in themselves, that having a network of people that you trust means that you live a better life. It also means that our economy works better. If we don't trust one another, it's actually much harder to do business than if there's a bit of trust around. But social capital also is one of the great pleasures in life. The football game, the chat by the water cooler, the time that you spend with your friends at a cafe or a pub. So it's the notion that all of those things have a value, much like physical capital and human capital have a value.
And if we could rate them in a sort of a social GDP, is it in advance or decline?
Well, I think it certainly increases real GDP because market interactions work better when you've got strong human interactions underpinning them. Strong markets actually work best in places with strong human connections.
What about that sum of social capital, though? I mean, how are we faring?
Overall, we've been declining since the 1960s. My book, Disconnected, was inspired by Robert Putnam's Bowling Alone, which showed that America had declined in community life. And I find much the same. I find that churches and unions are shedding members. Fewer of us are likely to be members of any organisation. If you look at individual organisations, Scouts, Guides, Rotary, Lions, the Labor Party, the Liberal Party, all shedding members. And then if we look at friendships as well, if we survey people in the 80s and in the 2000s and ask, how many friends do you have that you could really trust with a confidence? How many are there with whom you could turn to in times of difficulty? You find Australians reporting that they have fewer close friends in the 2000s than they did in the 1980s.
One of the things that I'm quite curious about, and perhaps you, and I understand that you actually assisted Dr. Putnam on Bowling Alone, which is the sort of the ne plus ultra of loneliness scholarship. One of the things I wanted to ask you, and it's something that's always troubled me. I mean, sociologists can be a little bit snotty. They can be a little bit judgmental. We talk about the withering away of all forms of social interaction, but there is one place where people are actually meeting, and there is one place where people are sort of enjoying at least once yearly a very broad and very ritualized social interaction, and that is at shopping malls. I was wondering what your view of that kind of social interaction was.
I think it's certainly valid, Helen, and one of the things that really struck me in putting together Disconnected was the things that you can't measure, groups like mothers groups and book clubs and so on, and also those kind of exchanges at shopping malls. But all told, it wasn't obvious to me that things were getting better even when I took account of some of those other trends. I think there's ways in which technology can better connect us. I think there's certainly technical advances that might chart a way forward to a civic renaissance. But at the moment, I think we're at a bit of a low point in terms of civic connectedness.
But Helen, what's wrong with a bit of solitude and disconnection?
What is wrong with solitude? And I mean, how do you actually measure genuine connectedness? I mean, what is the scale?
Andrew?
Well, for me, it was very much looking at a pastiche of evidence, a whole lot of indicators across the board. So, you know, some of it is going back to the RSL's membership records for the last century. Some of it is looking at surveys as to how many people know their neighbours, who could drop in on their neighbours uninvited. None of it is a complete measure. It is really quite unlike measuring GDP, where you feel as though you've covered the field of economic activity. I know I haven't covered the field of social activity, but much of what I've looked at seems to be declining.
Andrew,
there's bright spots around, but overall, that's pointing down.
Has this not been one of the sort of central reasons, perhaps even the raison d'etre of sociology? I mean, I think that Durkheim and Weber were asking these questions about a century ago too, weren't they? Looking at the rise of mass culture and trying to compare this to the rise of the individual and the withering away of community. It's something that we've preoccupied ourselves with as, you know, public intellectuals have, and everyday persons like myself are also quite focused on this topic. You know, why is it changing? Why is it changing so fast? And just by way of analogy, because the starting point for this conversation is online social networks, and how they actually change the quality of our exchanges. There's a book called, oh my goodness, I can't remember what it's called, but it's written by the editor of the literary magazine Granter, and it's called A History of Email, I believe. And in I think his name is John Freeman, and in it the author talks...
Shrinking the World.
Very, very well done.
Nicely played, Andrew.
Haven't you done your reading?
Drink for you.
And in it, the author talks about a time, I think it was in 1916, where there's all sorts of newspaper editorials about this dangerous new addiction to this short form communication, and that was postcards. And back in 1916, some U.S. citizens were sending up to 8 postcards a day, and you know, people were quite justifiably worried about how this might impact on
them. This is the thing, isn't it, Andrew? I mean, this discussion about loneliness, isolation, and the impact of technology is age old, and it's very heated now around internet and social media. But the discussion, as Helen says, goes way further.
That's completely right. I mean, I think there is certainly positive stories you can tell about technology. Some of my favourite technologies, the website meetup.com, allows people with niche interests to connect with one another. So if you're a stamp collector in Bendigo, the internet is actually extremely empowering in connecting with other Bendigo stamp collectors. Also, I think the GPS-enabled mobile phones, where you can turn on an app and tell your friends which cafe you're at, and they can drop by. That again improves face-to-face interactions. But the bulk of the technology pushes the other way. I could spend, as a member of parliament, all of my day just answering email, and people also say things on email, not just to their politicians, but quite a bit to their politicians, that they would never say face to face. So the nastiness of the interactions is pretty striking.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it, Helen? I mean, yes, the discussion has been there for a while. The observed phenomena is old, but everything that we're doing technologically now is perhaps accelerating that. I mean, we're making many more relationships. They're broader, but are they a lot shallower? I mean, is that the issue?
It sounds to me like our erudite parliamentarian has read Shrinking the World, and you might recall in that, Andrew, the author talks about email in particular, but you can apply this to Twitter or Facebook or Pinterest or any of the other forms of social media that are currently so popular and growing, is that we tend to read, all of us tend to read email not with the same fixity that we would read printed text, and that's for a number of reasons. We also tend to respond to email much more quickly than we would to any other form of social interaction, and there was actually studies done in America. That just sounds so ridiculous. There were studies done in America. I can't cite it
it's
at the
true.
Moment because my brain's been ruined by overuse of social media. That said, we misinterpret digital exchanges, email in particular, more than 50% of the time. So we're responding at a rate that is too fast.
We need more time to think, and we might actually get it right and improve the relationships rather than misjudging.
And Jonathan, you and I interact on Twitter every now and then.
It happens.
And there can be conflagrations, of course, not between us ever. But there can be great misunderstanding. I had a fight with Mark Colvin the other day.
But is that the issue, Andrew? Mm. That the stuff that we're using to bring ourselves together it's really imperfect medium. It's not well suited to the sort of nuance of personal relationships.
Well, I think there's certainly some of that, Jonathan. I think it is also that this online activity crowds out offline activity, simply because there's only 24 hours in the day. So there's a survey of young Americans from 1999 to 2009, and the researchers actually said when they looked at the 99 results, they thought that young American kids were saturated in their media use. Over that period, they managed to increase by half an hour their time using the internet, by half an hour their time on TV, and by a full hour their time using video games. So they're effectively plugged in the entire time that they're not in school or sleeping. And I think that then leaves less time for a game of backyard soccer. One of my favourite bits out of the Freeman book is where he talks about email and slot machines, poker machines, as being similar because they work on what he calls a variable interval reinforcement schedule.
Yes.
Kind of a technical way of saying that most of the time you get nothing, but every now and then you get something wonderful. And so you've got this tendency to go back and check email again and again and again.
Yes.
And there's surveys where people are checking email 30 or 40 times an hour.
It's pretty hard
to get much work done, let alone have a chat with your coworker.
Is that all, just 30 or 40 times an hour?
I mean, that's the great but that's the great modern sort of sense of isolation, isn't it? Sitting there refreshing, 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 hoping for the response. It's a bit sad.
It is sad, but we could stand around and wring our hands and mourn the dwindling of the culture, or I think we could look at how these things can be very enriching. I don't think it's just things like Meetup which are the exception to the rule. One talks about the American teen and presumably by extension the Australian teen. Consuming more and more media all the time. But, I mean, how has the nature of that consumption changed? I mean, a lot of the time this is an augmented reality that they're having. I mean, the media can be consumed in addition to things that are actually being done in the real world. I mean, Foursquare is another good example of the way reality can be augmented, made more convenient. Foursquare, if you don't know, Foursquare is it's a thing that allows you just to check in via the GPS technology that the young
people
seem to...
Tells folk where you are and what you're doing.
And, I mean, if you've been to a particular place more than anybody else, then you become the mayor of that particular place and you oust all others. And that's been very effective in helping people in particular to navigate large urban areas. It started in New York and is still something that is being used by young people and older people now to navigate the city. And I refuse to see that as anything other than a good thing. And it's
absolutely,
it's very easy to go, social media is ruining the quality of our life. But I mean, I know as a freelance writer, I mean, Twitter for me is an absolute lifeline to what's happening, what I should be writing about, and it gives me some index, albeit perhaps sometimes a slightly biased one, of what the civic conversation is. Because, you know, I mean, nobody really reads newspapers anymore.
Andrew Lee, social inclusion was a big thing for the government at one point. Where is it now on the agenda?
I think social inclusion's coming through a whole range of policies there, Jonathan. So social inclusion is in part about the pension increases, but it's also about trying to make sure that small community groups have the resources they need through some of these small group grants. But I think also the answers to social capital are in large part not in the remit of government. Government is good at many things. We're not great at finding people new friends. And so a lot of what we need to do is...
You are good at provisioning childcare options to people, though, if you choose to. And I mean, we've not even talked about that. I mean, the fact is we can go bang on and on and on about, you know, Facebook...
We'll have to do that another time.
...dwindling the quality...
Childcare remains on the schedule for further discussion. discussion.
Well, I mean, how do you interact if you have no time and you're always at work?
Fair point, but for later. Yeah. Helen Razor and Andrew Lee, we appreciate very much your time. Loneliness, it's with us and it will remain so. But perhaps media might get us over the hump. This is Sunday Extra. It's coming up to news time.